Hey, gang, do you find yourself listening to your music on one app and then listening to your podcast on another app? If you do, stop this insane behavior right now and download Spotify. Spotify is home to all of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts. Podcasts including Fly on the Wall, the Saturday Night Live podcast with Dana Carvey and David Spade, the Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt, old favorites like Fresh Air, My Favorite Murder, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Look, if you're looking for a news podcast or sports or entertainment or true crime, look, if you're looking for a sewing podcast or an RV podcast, Spotify has all of this for you. That's Spotify. All of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts in one place. Find it in your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify, music and podcasts. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. Halloween weekend. Did you get out there? Did you dress up? Did you go live out some fantasy out in public, dressed as someone else? People love to do that, man, I'll tell you. Skyrocket played on Friday at the Rail House Bar in Kyle, Texas. It was a good show. It was a fun show. It was cold. It was windy. A lot of people came in from out of town. That was cool to see, but people didn't dress up. We didn't dress up. Oh, wait. We didn't dress up, and neither did the audience, except for four people in the audience were dressed up, and that wasn't very happening. I felt bad for them. I'm actually doing this intro on Halloween Day, and I'm playing tonight at Saxon Pub with Dr. Plankenstein, so by the time this comes out, that would have already happened. I'm sorry you missed it, but I'm doing this intro on Halloween Day, and this morning I went out and ran some errands, and one of those errands was to do my early voting, and I cannot tell you guys how easy it was. I walked into the place, I voted, there was no one in there. I mean, the election people were there, but no one else was voting. Walked in, did my voting, walked out, another guy was walking in. Hey, buddy. I was on my way out. That's it. Lickety split, baby. No fuss, no muss. You're in, you're out. Early voting is a great way to have your voice heard. I know a lot of people like to wait till election day, but that's a pain in the fucking ass. And if a bunch of shit comes up that day, you get tied up doing other stuff, you're not going to make it out to vote. I'm telling you, you won't. And this isn't like a presidential election, so people don't think it's that, oh, you know, well, you know, However, people like procrastinate and like put that shit off. This is an important election to everyone, apparently. So get out there and have your voice heard, and hopefully we can turn the tide or, you know, whatever, steer the ship into a direction that we want to live in. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Yes, I have a great, great, great show for you today. I talked to art rock band, San Antonio art rock band, Buttercup. But this episode, I go off campus. This is a field trip episode. I went down to LaGrange to the fabulous listening room, The Bugle Boy. Fantastic, fantastic place, man. I went down there and talked to them before their show. They played like a week and a half ago on a Sunday afternoon. They did a special afternoon show there at the Bugle Boy. And I went down there. My friend Richard Scantz books this place, and we had set up something back in June to do something with another band, but they had caught COVID, and we didn't get to do it. So then he told me Buttercup was coming, and I was so excited because I love the band Buttercup, and I'm old friends with Odie and Eric Sandin. They were in a band in the 90s called Evergreen, and we played some shows together but became really good, tight friends and very close buddies with very little time. That happens sometimes in music. Like, you just hit it off. Like, bands become like brother bands, and that's what happened. I ended up meeting Joe Reyes from the band like 10 years ago or something. I was doing a songwriter thing at Strange Brew, and he came out and played with Salim Nirala. Then I had him on the podcast. Anyway, I've wanted to have Buttercup on for a long time, And this was my chance. My friend Richard Scantz reached out to me. He said, Buttercup's coming on. Do you want to do this thing out at the Bugle Boy? And I was like, hell yeah, man. I've been hearing about the Bugle Boy for years. My circle of friends, people go out there and go see shows. A ton of my friends go out there and play. And I'm like, what's going on out there? And it's just a magical listening room. Going out there for myself was really great. They have a fantastic staff, this lady Heather, and of course Richard, and all the people there were so nice. I forgot my memory card to do the interview, so I couldn't record it when I got there. They ran out, got it for me, just so nice, just such nice people. Everyone was accommodating. The place is really nice. It's like in an old army barrack. I can read to you from their brochure, because it's a nonprofit, and they do all kinds of stuff. Like, they do all kinds of, like, community outreach. They do youth concerts. They do nursing home concerts. They partner with Swan Songs, who you've heard here on the show even just last month, my friend Christine Albert's nonprofit, and Soldier Songs and Voices, who you've heard with Dustin and Kevin Welch. And it's just an amazing listening room. So let me read to you from their brochure. After retrofitting a World War II Army barracks, the Bugle Boy Listening Room opened in January 2005 with the mission to elevate and sustain original live music. Today, the venue is hailed as one of the country's premier listening rooms. From the friendly staff, I can vouch for that, and volunteers, comfortable theater seating, and excellent acoustics, I can vouch for that as well. It's a fantastic place. Concert goers are sure to enjoy a wonderful evening of music. Now, you can get out there and find out more about the Bugle Boy and support them by going to thebugleboy.org. But I do urge you, man, if you live in Austin, or maybe you're listening, you live in Bastrop or Smithville or something, get out there to the Bugle Boy and see a show, man. There's so many great people have played there. They have, I think they do it seasonally, their concerts. I don't know exactly how that works, but you can go to bugleboy.org and find out more about Bugle Boy Foundation. But they've had Ray Wiley Hubbard, Carolyn Wonderland, Ruthie Foster, Carrie Rodriguez, Marsha Ball, Shake Russell, Shelley King, South Austin Moonlighters, Jamie Lynn Wilson, and so many more. Intimate concerts in a great listening room. And it's not like a get wasted place. Like, it's not like they have a shot bar or some shit there, like Jägermeister stuff that you can get off the bar and start drinking. It's like, yeah, they got beer and wine, but they also have coffee, Cokes, water and stuff. Like, you go there, you're going there to listen to the music. You're not going there to party and get wasted. It's a definitely like a listening room. The Bugle Boy. Go check it out. Bugle Boy, thebugleboy.org. You can, I'll put a link to it in the text of this podcast. Now, let me just tell you, it was great. It was great going out there, and it was great meeting all the fine folks there. As I said, Heather and talking to Richard and all those gang out there. But it was so great catching up with Eric and Odie and Joe from the band Buttercup. Buttercup is an art rock band from San Antonio. If you don't know about this band, a lot of people in Texas do. A lot of hip people know about Buttercup, because Buttercup started off like not playing. They started off in 2003. They started out putting music in like 2004. Because what I remember is like when Buttercup started, I was like, oh, I was following them on like MySpace. And so throughout the time of social media, I've been able to follow them and their rise and everything they've done. They just did a tour. They just put out a record called Specs, which is an autobiographical record, which has songs about each member. And it was great catching up with these guys. As I said, I know these guys from Odie and Eric from when they were in Evergreen. We tell a great story about when we were all playing a cable convention for this cable channel called Much Music in the 90s in Dallas, where we opened for Robbie Krieger, all of us. Anyway, it was a great time. We talk about it. Eric and I catch up about what we thought about Robbie Krieger's outfit that day. Because even though it happened in like 1996, we still remember what the dude was wearing. Anyway, Buttercup has gone on to put out a ton of records, fantastic records, all just very different from each other, exploring all kinds of different things. And this new record, Specs, an autobiographical record, there's a song about each of the members, and they're fantastic, fantastic songs. Their last record, Battle of Flowers, is also very, very great. You can find them at wearebuttercup.com. They have a fantastic Bandcamp site. So go there and buy their music there. If you buy music, get out there. If you want to support this band, support them that way. It was great catching up with these guys. It was great sitting down at the Bugle Boy and having this great conversation in such a beautiful environment. I urge all of you to get out there and check out the Bugle Boy in LaGrange. Get out there, take someone on a date. That's what I thought when I was like, ooh, maybe I'll take someone on a date to the Bugle Boy in LaGrange. That sounds pretty cool. go to thebugleboy.org. You can follow Buttercup at wearebuttercup.com. We have such a great conversation. I want to thank everybody at Bugle Boy. I want to thank all the dudes from Buttercup, Eric Sandin, Joe Reyes, Odie. So great seeing those guys again. So great catching up. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation from the Bugle Boy in LaGrange. This is me and Buttercup chatting it up. Let's get down. We're at the Bugle Boy in LaGrange. I need to acknowledge that from the get-go. Normally, I'm in my apartment, but we came to the Bugle Boy at the our friend Richard Scantz suggested that we do this thing here, and this is really awesome being here. So
I'd like to validate that too.
Yeah, it's a great room.
Oh yeah. Everything about
we
it.
We are here.
Yeah, I've already started my brain. The mice are working double time on that wheel go round thing because this is our practice gig. I already have ideas for the next one. We're coming back.
Oh yeah,
we haven't even done this
so
one yet.
So there's so much to get through this. First of all, I'm going to say this, that we know each other from over 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From when you guys had a band called Evergreen, but you were not in Evergreen.
No. I was like alongside them, like, but in the jazz world.
And okay,
we were all kind of going around. Yeah,
okay,
the same places though, same cities and whatnot.
Yeah. So that band with Jamie and Charlie, and was there another guy?
Kevin Higginbotham.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I remember a great party in Dallas in a hotel room, if you guys remember that, where we played these Much Music things.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember that?
Those. Right.
Yeah. We played with Robbie Krieger.
With Robbie Krieger. Yeah.
The
Doors. It was like our bands and Robbie Krieger.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember Robbie had... He sounded just like Jim Morrison sang. He sounded great. And he looked like he had completely given up.
He did.
He had those...
Yeah, like those pants with elastic and the
Sammy
ankles.
Hagar pants.
And he had like his wallet and so his clearly. Keys in the front pocket. And it looked like he had
right
maybe
now,
some kind of hip cancer, like a big goiter sticking out. And he looked horrible, like kind of like Gallagher or something. You know, And I thought at the time, I will never... ever I wear pants like that. I will not give up. And I have pants like that now that I wear
and Crocs.
You know what's
Crocs.
Fucked up
I
is
like
I wonder if he's like them. If he was like the age we are now then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, right.
It's gotta be
right.
Yeah. Like he was like
right.
Isn't
that weird?
No kidding, right? Yeah, you're right.
And thinking like, man, I just these are good enough, and then puts on the parachute pants and goes plays the gig.
Well, I'm glad we're all still wearing regular clothes.
Yeah.
No one's given up here.
As far as you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, crumbs all over me. Like,
no one's given up here.
This is radio, not video.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
The other thing I remember, just the last blast from the past, and we'll get on to the Buttercup world, was you guys doing, like, you guys did Exile on Main Street a few times. Do you remember that?
More than a few times.
Yeah. But I remember going in Austin and singing some song with
did
you
we
guys.
Do it in Austin?
Uh-huh. I remember like
where?
White Rabbit or something. Like, not White Rabbit.
Really?
At White Rabbit. Yeah, because there was one in Austin. Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Whoa.
I don't remember that.
God, I remember the venue and everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I remember it. And I remember that this is before YouTube videos. And so to figure out those songs, we figured them out by ear.
Oh, my God. That was so difficult.
And we did it in standard tuning. And now I know.
Right.
It's super simple, but we were doing ridiculous calisthenics with our hands. I was stretching like 8 frets to do things. And it was so dumb. Where you could just, if you tune it open, you can just mash your finger down and it sounds fine.
Well, also after you, because we didn't have...
Keith's not working that hard.
No, he's not. He's smart. He knows how to work.
We didn't have stage tuners back then either. So you put the record on and depending on if your record's running at the... actual 33
RPM exactly.
Like you tuned your guitar to that, but by the time you get to the second, after Rocks Off, which is the opener, and then the next song, you're already off like a quarter cent or something. And by the third song, you have to retune the entire instrument.
That was back in the day when they would just go to a piano in the studio and tune to a note.
But who knows what that piano
is. Who knows what
exactly.
that was tuned to. And then who knows where the tape got pitched around, right? They were like, a little faster, zing, you know, a few... more, you know, just feet per second on the tape will make it rise in pitch. So I'd love that back in the 60s, it was like that. Like, guitars weren't completely in tune with each other.
No.
Drums weren't really captured in this way that you heard every
part
of the drum
kit. You were just saying in the car on the way up here, talking about AC/DC.
Yeah.
When they recorded, like, their guitars were not even in tune with themselves, and then they would tune the two guitars separated are were nice. Even not even in tune. Yeah.
But
and
that
then
spread them. Sounds great. It sounds like a band. It still sounds like classic recording to me.
Yeah,
maybe it was the little, you know, stomp box tuner that kind of killed rock and roll, because it's like everybody's in tune now. It's just kind of sad.
I think you are attracted to this because you physically cannot be out of tune. I know this area well.
This right. is true. Yeah.
To be out
We've
of tune.
Made a
Joe
of
relies on there. Eric and myself for our instruments to be out of tune.
Yeah.
Because he's in tune. He cannot not be in tune.
Yeah, or out of he can't be out of time. That's our realm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's this straight
realm,
bullet
it's the,
line.
It's the realm that I really appreciate, though. This realm of like self-taught, self-learning, self-growing people that love music for music's sake and don't get bogged down into the minutiae of it like I did, like as a kid.
But there's always like a scientist, I always feel like, especially yes. like in a rock and roll band, you need a guy that knows.
Yeah.
That knows stuff.
Tommy Ramone worked yeah, in exactly. studios. Like he had actually done yeah. like hit recordings before, you know, the Ramones stepped into that studio together. Yeah. So there's one guy. Yeah, well, you're right. It's probably one guy. In
the tuning
band.
Police, the yeah. time police, mm-hmm, the, mm-hmm. you know.
A little That's bit of Joe that. Reyes.
Yeah. Joe Reyes.
Yeah, but this band doesn't you're need policing.
Like, okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, so your new record, Specs. There's a, is that real strings on Us V Them? Or
yes,
it is.
Yeah, Jody's bowing a bowing upright. A bass, an upright bass. Yeah.
Okay,
right. And then there is like a string pad somewhere in there, maybe in the back.
But that's underneath. Not strings,
underneath.
Right?
No, that's like a synth, like an old Roland string machine or something.
But yeah, okay. Odie's, it sounds pretty
Odie's
real.
Bowing, Odie's yeah. bowing it. Yeah,
okay. right. Maybe yeah, that's what's coming
yeah,
through
the meat of
it. Yeah,
yeah,
because yeah, there's a few passes.
And you can
of
hear I'm very pitchy. I'm not an upright player, so. And so that
makes it sound even more real.
Right. Yeah. It satisfies Joe's need for something to be out of.
Like, there's just something about
I'm
the
I'm too
words
good. Odie, get on the bass.
Grab so, the bow. In going through your stuff, like when did you put out? You guys have been together almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And you put out your first record when?
It has been 20 years.
Like
right?
2007, yeah. 2006, 2005. What?
2004?
2004 was okay. our first record. Yeah. Right. Sicula Far. We did a DVD documentary before that. Before that.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to see if you had some yeah. kind of weird link to that.
We do. I thought we put it on our YouTube. I think it is.
It's on YouTube. Actually, it is on YouTube.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, I thought we had some more.
They don't call me Johnny Research for nothing.
There you go. Yeah. Right on. Johnny Research.
All right. So, this record is, from what I can tell from your discography, different in that there's like a real focus to it. It's a concept record.
Right.
As it is basically describing each of you guys.
Right.
And Claire, who's not here.
Right.
And is Claire here sometimes? Is there...
She moved to L.A.
Okay.
And so Claire is a rocket ship taking off right now.
Oh, Planet yeah. Claire. She's on her own place.
She's on her own place.
Yeah.
But we're happy for her. It's amazing. We were glad that we were...
We're happy for her and very sad for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I went and listened, like, I went and listened to her stuff, like, just to see, like, where she coming from. And I saw that she was based in L.A., but I didn't know if she lived there and then moved here
yeah.
or lived here and then moved... Anyway, her stuff is out there.
Yeah.
Like, really.
Oh, yeah.
And in an awesome way. Okay, so in making this record Specs and in writing it, did you set out to make a record like this, to do this autobiographical?
You know, it's something that we've been toying with for years. This idea of writing what you know, and then also being honest and being really honest. And so there's been a couple of songs. I mean, I made a joke many years ago, like, why doesn't Morrissey just write a song called Morrissey? Because, I mean, it seems like they're all about him. All, you know, like his big ego and like, just do it. And then, so we wrote a song called Eric Sandin, and it was kind of a joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, and it's kind of this heavy metal song, like on a, it's gonna, yeah, we did this years ago. And then there was, so during the pandemic, I was doing a lot of creative nonfiction writing,
okay.
and then feeling guilty about not writing songs.
Okay.
In this time where I have all this time, but then New York Times article came out yesterday saying that, like, did you get less creative during the pandemic? Your personality changed. Like, that's an actual thing that happened. And for me, I felt wildly kind of uncreative, at least with music.
And
felt sad. So I felt guilty, and I'm going to write something. But I was doing this creative nonfiction, and then... And that was like memoir kind of writing.
Okay.
Memories, a lot of stuff about music, growing up in the 80s. And then I don't know, I just was like, I had several iterations of a song called Joe Reyes that never could be written. But it, you know, it was like this really kind of like heartfelt song about friendship.
Yeah.
You know, we write a lot of songs about love.
Yeah.
But I thought this would be nice to have.
Joe deserves a love song. Yeah,
he does.
Yeah,
and so we got it. We did it. But when I came with the ideas of the songs, I had an old typewriter. I was just typing up the lyric, and for several of them, like I love my voice, which is about my voice and my complicated relationship and shame about my voice.
Yeah. Did you send the song to Nico Case, by the way?
I need to. I tagged her in a tweet, but I don't think she got that yet. So Joe needs to get on that.
Yeah, that's right.
She sent him a heart once.
Oh, that's really
true. Yeah, we were listening to her in the van, and I think I said something like, "She's the man," and then she liked that.
I mean, that's Claire's good. Close to her. Claire should do that.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
But yeah, so I brought that lyric to the rehearsal, and we were all there. And Joe's like, "Oh, cool, you wrote the song." And I'm like, "He's like, how's it going?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't have any." He's like, "Well, what's the melody?" I'm like, "There is nothing. It's just this idea." Yeah. Well, how did the lyrics go? Like this, maybe? And then we created in the course of, like, you know, it took a little while, but not too long. We just kind of created a piece together.
Really quick.
Yeah, and then Odie, like, you know, came up with the, like, melody at the end that actually has a little melody.
Both
of you guys are shrugging.
All the collaborations are like that, I want to say. But this one definitely comes out of the pandemic and this time when we've got way too much time to look at ourselves and be introspective. And so I think the fact that it actually yielded some good art is amazing to me. I think definitely that's the hallmark of our band.
Yeah.
Is we can take something, some adversity or something, but flip it into something that's beautiful to look at or listen to again. And so... I think that's it. I think that's the idea, is to morph those things into something that we can all cherish again. So, because it was hard. It was really hard for all of us to just not be performing, working. We couldn't be in the same room together. I think we all experienced that, and it was awful. For people who generally, like, are together. Yeah.
Well, Johnny, you were the person... I just read a book about masculinity and interruption, and here I am.
Go.
But you were, like, the person who, like, you could play and sing at a time where Odie and I could not do either of those things. And we were like, Johnny Gowdy, he knows how to play Beatles songs and he can do it.
What do you mean?
You guys were amazing.
You guys were amazing. You were like so next to your band.
Really?
Maynard. Oh, yeah. You guys were.
Yeah. Like, you guys were harmonizing and
musicians.
We were like. Just trying. And
we were like clubbing our instruments, like Eric on guitar and me on bass, like. We might as well had a baseball bat in our hands. Like,
it's true.
What are we doing?
It had a minimalism.
When are we going to get drunk?
Sweet. But, and I remember that, and you were such a good performer. So for the pandemic, did it affect you not being able to perform?
No, I still sang in my phone at people. Like, you know what
you.
I mean? Like, I did live streams.
Oh, right, cool. That's
but,
good.
But you know what? My relationship with performing has changed a lot since then. My relationship to performing, like I'm okay with, I love myself now. You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
I used to perform like nobody loved me. And right. like if my dad wasn't going to acknowledge me, then everyone in the fucking world would, you know what I mean? Like I, and I had that sort of like,
absolutely.
I feel like now it's much more professional. Like then it was very raw. And I was just like, if there's one person in the room, they're never going to forget that they were here. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
I don't,
totally relate.
I'm not fighting for that level of attention anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Isn't that interesting? As you get older, you get a little bit more comfortable with yourself and you're like, or hopefully,
which is why you don't care if you have Crocs or those big old MC Hammer pants.
I still care. I don't have Crocs, and we're I don't wear shorts to public places.
I was going to say, I haven't reached Robbie Krieger level yet, although I feel like a tipping point is
close. It's so funny that you remember those pants, because I remember them too.
I know. I saw it. Your eyes lit up when I said the pants. And you're like the elastic. And I'm
whenever
like,
I tell the Robbie Krieger story, I'm always like, and you guys, man, he was wearing like, I think he was wearing a fanny pack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was just not.
Yeah.
He was not rocking.
Wait a minute. Thank you for that lovely compliment. Because I remember there's a funny thing, and I was saying to Einar the other day when I was telling him that I was coming to go to talk to you guys, that in all of my memories, like whatever they are, there's like maybe five times we hung out together. Mm-hmm. But they were awesome, and they were epic, and I always smile when I think about all you guys.
Sure.
Yeah, me
honestly.
Too.
Same
yeah.
thing.
Me too.
Good.
That's fun.
So Joe, you were saying that like you had to take this time and this experience that you were having and turning it into art. And that's one thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, because you are not like an art rock band and not like an art pop band, but like an art project band. Is that what you are? Do you see yourselves as that?
I do. Yeah.
I think that's the better.
More than like Evergreen was like a rock and roll band.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
This isn't a rock and roll band. There's like a whole other thing. You guys, there's an intention going on before you go rock.
I'd say it's all song oriented. I realize now that if you have the right template, it's like we could create anything around it and it would work. So I say it's the really strong songwriting of Eric combined with whatever Odie and I can bring to it that really kind of give the band any sort of like kind of direction or flow. But it's always good. Like, there's never a dud. There's never this feeling like, ah, there's nothing we can do with this. And if we did, like, hit a wall, it would simply just go, like, kind of, like, back on the list, but maybe somewhere else, and we would return to it and go, oh, we were going it too fast. Or maybe it doesn't need drums, or whatever. And then suddenly we pull something out. And that might be from years of me, you know, doing that sort of production work with the Morales brothers and working with a lot of people through the 80s and 90s to see how records were made.
Yeah.
And go, oh, wow, that's actually a good idea.
Yeah.
And perhaps subconsciously all those things are coming out as we're writing and, you know, arranging the songs. But it doesn't come from like an egotistic place. It's just like that would sound best.
Right.
And then
right.
we all have to agree. That's the other thing. We have to come to an agreement before it will work. So that's in essence, I think it's the three of us. But someone has to spearhead it all, and I feel like it's Eric. So
you come in with like an idea, like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You had the lyrics for that song, and
yeah, I mean, I would like to proffer that. I mean, he's a super strong songwriting. It is that's collective because I mean, I think the thing that I can bring sometimes is an idea that the song is about something. I don't know that that's absolutely necessary, but that's how we work. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's some kind of conceit behind it that I think is interesting. But it's the CPR that Odie and Joe perform on the very feeble and premature baby skeleton that I begin to birth and they blow on it and push down and perform the resuscitation.
But we're all parents. We're co-parenting.
We're co-parenting these little songs.
Doing a great job.
Yeah, thanks. I love it. It's
very rare that we need to bust out the defibrillator, but
it happens.
If it's necessary, it's necessary.
Yeah.
I mean,
we all agree on it. Is that time? Yes.
But as you know, when you were mentioning about the art part, I mean, I love that Joe says it's about the songs, and I think that is our you know, if there's a manifesto, an unspoken manifesto of the band, it's that we love these quality songs. And you know, the fascinating thing with songs is that they can take any form. You know, that what should on paper be lousy sometimes is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And you know, even Depeche Mode has a song with one note. You know, like the melody is one note. You know, like I mean, these things that
you just don't know
are surprising, and it works. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a playfulness with the way that we approach the song that spills into the performance.
Yeah,
I think they're twinned.
Yeah. There was a word, and I can't remember what it is now, that I was thinking on Friday when I was listening to this stuff, like, all together. There's a great, for people that listen to Spotify, I know that a lot of people get mad. You guys have a very good Bandcamp page where all your stuff is available on there. People should go there. But there's also, This Is Buttercup playlist on Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
I think Spotify just makes them.
Yeah.
But... It's really good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it has everything from Specs on back to the first record.
Great.
Yeah, it's nice to listen to.
Oh, that's nice.
On your drives. But yeah, I'm glad you guys have a band camp and you seem to keep that very active, and that seems to be the focus of places to.
Yeah, I like band camp.
Yeah.
That's my work, guys. Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah, it's really Eric. Neither Odie or I are online like that.
So that's been a huge change throughout the thing. What is your relationship to the streaming services and what they does that matter to you?
I don't know if we ever sold enough records that it would have mattered.
That's the way right. I've always looked at yeah. it. Like, I mean, I'm like, well, at least everyone can find it.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
I do feel like access is probably the greatest asset that yeah. the thing has, which is like literally like in your phone, you can pull up a song that, yeah, you wrote or produced yeah. or whatever. But I feel bad for people whose, you know, livelihood was based on sales, right?
Right
like
right.
any, like Nico Case is a good example of somebody like who could lose their farm simply because they just can't sell as many albums yeah. as they used to before.
Yeah.
And then when they tour, they have to make sure, you know, the venue's big enough for them to earn enough for the break even. Everything, all the expenses for touring have gone up. Just one cancellation can throw the whole thing into... arrears, and suddenly you're in debt again. It's like, it's really tough these days. I don't know anybody really who doesn't supplement their income with some other art-related job. It's usually teaching, like for Eric and I, and Odie. Like we're all, you know, like teachers.
Music teachers? Or
actually, Eric tutors.
Awesome.
And I teach guitar. Yeah, okay. And then eventually, you know, some of those students will like end up writing songs and I can help them record them.
Yeah.
Right, so that feeds in kind of to the engineering, producing side of what I do.
Yeah.
But all of that stuff is so grassroots. We're lucky that we live in a community where kind of, you know, everybody knows us and knows whom to reach out to in that
right.
in that moment. It's
right.
like, oh, call him. Or I, you know, I definitely send people both ways. Like, you know, oh, you need to talk to this guy. He would be great. Right.
right.
Or Eric's. Talk
or
to
this
Eric.
Girl.
Or this, yeah, anyone who's out there working, yeah. So I think, again, it's a double-edged sword. I hate that there's some multi-billion corporation that's earning something off our backs. I just wish they would cut us in a little bit more is all.
Right. Yeah, I've never lived off of the
right.
sales of my records.
No. I lived off advances
so, yeah.
when I had a record deal.
Right, exactly.
Like, well, they would front you some money and you could live on that yeah. for a little bit, but eventually that would have to get recouped. And so if you didn't sell enough, it was like, oh man, yeah, all of that.
Unless you leave.
Yes.
Or they let you go.
Yeah, yeah.
I left, and A&R and me were all that was left of our band. and we were like, do we wait? Because they're going to give us some money if they let us go. But
let's
how long do we have to wait? Like we
yeah.
just took the yeah. we took the high road, or what we thought was the high road.
Yeah, to just leave.
The poor guy road.
I understand it.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> And you kept yeah. your integrity.
Yeah.
We thought we did. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how all that stuff has changed too, because like when we were coming up in the 90s, like if you had a song in a commercial, you were hated. You were like a loser and a jerk.
Oh,
and
right.
now that's the best thing that can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
The very best thing that can happen to anyone.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It is weird, isn't it? And it's okay. Like it's not. No,
I love that on social media now you can actually be following the artist and they can mention that. Like Reckless Eric had a, you know, the chorus of his song, I go the whole wide world just to find you, but Expedia used it, right? It's like a 10-second little, you know, chunk of the song, but that obviously like helped him out in some way. He's like, you know, there I am again for 10 seconds.
Yeah, I hope it assuage his rotten soul.
How's that? What do you got? I mean, do you find it sad that that's what's happened to art, or is that just like
I think it's just
that
another,
Warhol told us this was going to happen
someday?
Another
way it gets commercialized, right? Like it's always been
yeah.
kind of, you know, the handmaiden of you know, movies, television shows, commercials, you know, things
yeah.
like that. But the art part never goes away. When you go back and listen to classic records, I don't get any of those feelings. I don't remember the commercial. I don't remember the movie it's from. I just listen to the song and go, ah, that was brilliant.
That's
How did
right.
I get that? How did the Carpenters get that? Or whatever it was. Like it's, for me, it's always that. And so it'll just come back to music and art again. The commerce of it comes and goes, I guess.
Yes.
All of us are lifers. We're all sitting around a table talking about it. So,
yeah.
So there must be something that keeps us coming back. It feeds us in some way. It informs us in some way that's good.
Yeah.
It reminds us, like, everything is one. Everything is now. And those are the most important things to remember.
Yeah. That's a great Amen. Place to end, but we still have more time. So
we'll edit that in.
You guys just went on
Cut
tour.
Paste.
You went out on the road to the West.
Mini tour.
Who are you saying you went with? Walter?
With Walter Salas-Humara from the Silos, and had a wonderful time. He kissed me on the lips, and then I got COVID.
Wow, really?
On the last show, I got COVID. I came home with that.
That's not why or how you got it.
I doubt that's how I got it. I think I got it. I know the moment from...
From that other guy who was
who bought
our
last vinyl record we had. Like, we sold all our merch, which was great.
Yeah.
But... he bought that, and he was. I think I remember saying, "I really like you, man, but you're standing in my mouth right now. Can you please a little bit away?" And he was telling me about his divorce and all these things, and he was very moved, I think. But yeah, I got COVID. I think he gave.
And he kissed you on the mouth, and that's how you got it.
Mm.
So wait, you got COVID and then had to ride in the van all the way back to Texas?
No, we flew back. Okay. And so I got it really tested. I think it was the day after or two days after I came back. And lovely Debbie, who lives with me, she did not get it somehow.
She's a superhuman. That's what I've heard. That's the word out in the parking lot of the Beagle Boy.
She's exuding health.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
The dress,
blooming,
the shoes.
Good health.
Yeah. So how was it? What was it? Was that the... How many tours have you guys done?
I mean, we've done lots of little ones. Mostly, we're a Texas band, and as we've gotten older, we blossom out less. But you know, Joe and Odie have been touring a lot with their other bands lately. Buttercup needs to get our act together, get out there more.
What other bands are you guys touring with?
I go out on the road a lot with Garrett T. Caps and NASA Country.
Okay,
we're going to Chicago on Wednesday.
Nice.
But we went to Europe earlier this year, May and June. It's like 3.5 weeks.
Nice.
And then,
yeah. And
Garrett's
I just
go get her. And Joe actually just got back from Europe.
Yeah, and I was playing with Walter again with his old band, The Silos. The Silos were a band.
So you're playing with The Silos?
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
It became a Silo. It was weird. It was odd to think that, you know, Mitch Webb and I, when we were neighbors in the 90s, used to listen to those records all the time in the backyard. And I was like, man, this guy's great. He's a good writer.
Yeah.
These records kind of have this cool feel to them. And, you know, I would go see them. They had that trio kind of playing in the 90s. And I would go see them at South By, or they'd come down and play Casbeers in San Antonio. And one day I was just buying a T-shirt, and he was like, "You live down here, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "You play in bands, right?" I'm like, "Uh-huh." He's like, "You want to play in my band?" I'm like, "What?" And that was literally it. I was like, "Oh, okay." And that kind of, you know, started. We were kind of working on his solo records at that time, but this is the 35th anniversary of Cuba, which was a fairly big record for those guys. It was kind of like a Wilco-esque country rock thing when that thing really wasn't a thing yet. So
went to his new Sincerity.
Yeah, exactly.
In the time of the True Believers and all that stuff.
All that stuff was hitting, and so were The Silos. And so we just got back from 2 weeks in Spain playing that record pretty much in its entirety. And man, all these fans came out of the woodwork. It was a great turnout. Yeah. Everybody was just sort of psyched to hear those songs again. The original drummer, like, you know, from the 90s was on that tour, Conrad Meisner, who's great. He grew up
we
in
played
Austin
together
too. That's
played together.
Conrad's a really sweet, genteel dude, and so it was really nice to reconnect with him. But so Odie and I do a bit of that work, and then Buttercup, like, I guess there might have been a point in the mid-2000s where we would have shifted into like a touring band, you know, gotten an agent and just kept on the road a lot more. But I think it would have come at the price of us making as many recordings as we have. Like, we have a consistent discography of, like, making a record at least every year or two. And that year, when I guess we were getting the most lauded in the mid-2000s, we made 3 EPs in 1 year.
Right.
Right? Instead of being on the road. It was like we made a conscious decision right then and there to not be a Steely Danish band, but that kind of band, right? The band that, like, wants to, like, kind of produce... like songs.
Well, I was also under the impression then, and tell me if I'm wrong, like, I remember when that, it was around the time when I got divorced and like MySpace was starting. Oh, yeah. And so you could kind of keep up with people even though you didn't see them all the time.
Sure.
Like on your own.
Yep.
And I remember at that time, like, it was when Billy Harvey put out a record, and I remember you guys were doing some shows together.
Yep. Yeah.
Is that right? But you guys
yeah, when he did Pie.
Pie, that's
that,
right.
That was
when,
like,
he did Pie.
That was a good record.
Great
record,
man.
Great record, yeah.
Great record.
He's excellent.
He's one of my favorite artists, like,
yeah.
And even of just people that I know, just of as an artist, but But he really, like, all the records got so sad after that, that, like,
that's
Pie right. was, like, the last, like,
yeah,
fun
true.
Record of his to listen to for a while, yep, for a
they
few
got
years.
Real introspective after that.
Yeah,
true.
But what I remember about you guys was that there was, like, a, oh, they'd, like, I can't remember if he told me this or somebody in a conversation told me this, but I was under the impression that you guys weren't playing, like, bars. You were doing, like,
yes.
art galleries and, like, different kind of shows than
right.
going and playing at the White Rabbit or whatever. Nothing against that place.
No, yeah.
And this fits. This place fits into that sort
absolutely,
of.
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard, for bringing
yeah.
us in.
Yeah. We definitely went that direction. And to me, the art needs the proper frame. And that if you don't, if you put it in the wrong spot,
sure.
and then people will just ignore it.
Yeah. And that has been the case.
Yeah. So scientifically proven.
When you guys got together, that was like something you. Part of yeah. what you were going to do. That was part of the ethos is like, hey, we're not going to be like some band selling Miller Lite or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, to quote Odie, he was like, I am tired of yanking my soul out of my body every Monday night at the Tequila Mockingbird. Can we please, you know, get off the river in San Antonio in the tourist center and let's go somewhere and do this on our own terms. And it got better once we did that.
Yeah, and those were the beginning sure. of those Grackle Monday shows where we'd play every Monday, you know, at a friend's art space.
Okay.
And they were like each show was radically different. We were trying to put something special
yeah.
together.
We had a wheel that you'd
a lot of
spin
gimmicks.
To choose your cover charge, right? You could get in for free or maybe pay. It wasn't very much.
I think $4 was the
highest one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was somewhere between Little Rascals and something highly psychedelic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun.
But we became friends with almost everyone in the art community immediately because, you know, we were using their art spaces and their warehouses. And so they're
and
still
you were bringing
our friends.
People into them
oh, yeah.
that
yeah,
normally
thing,
wouldn't probably be going there.
A thing yeah. started happening, yeah, the synergy between all of us really as artists. And we knew, we were like, this is the way, this is how it should
yeah.
go.
Yeah, like, I mean, people would show up at the regular gig and then there would be a trailer out front and we'd get everyone in it and drive around the neighborhood and
oh, flatbed
singing
trailer,
like flatbed
yeah.
trailer and, you know, like with people with weird hats and stuff. I mean, it's super fun. Yeah. They just didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Did it get to a point there where like you had to like really like you couldn't just play a show, like you had to come up with this whole was that daunting after a while?
Daunting
was that
because
difficult?
You know, and at a point it was so
was
fun.
High.
The bar was high, and then we were trying to learn new songs and record
right.
things at the same time. But it was like really our energies had to be devoted to this live performance thing to make it to be able to pull
right.
it off.
We weren't even recording yet.
No,
remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we were writing, and it
we
was
were
just
writing.
We were writing.
And people were starting to donate money. I remember Wilton just threw $100, like, in change on the stage one night and said, these guys need to make a record. Here, help me. And he just threw all this money
yeah.
at us.
He had coins. Gone to the mall, like, to where
there's a fountain. There used to be a fountain at Central Park Mall
right.
where, you know, you make a wish and you throw coins in. He went there and took all the coins out.
That's
and
right.
They were all, like, you know,
green
and yeah. moldy, and he just dumped it on the stage, and that was the seed money for our first record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think normally stealing the money out of those wish things would karmically be not good, but I think in this case it probably was good.
Oh, no.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It,
yeah.
I mean, it really moved me because
yeah.
then it,
yeah.
it instantly shifted for me. I felt a sudden overwhelming support and just recentering of, oh, we have to now record.
Yeah.
Like it just boom, and we made our first record.
Right.
Yeah. For $400.
Yeah, it was really inexpensive. Yeah. But Mark Rubenstein produced those records. So Mark was in the Rejects. He was in a bunch of seminal punk rock bands in San Antonio. And then he and I ended up playing in this like little jazz trio together. He on accordion, me on guitar, and Greg Norris on bass.
What's the relationship to jazz and punk rock? Because there seems to be a bit. I understand
you know,
the one between folk and punk rock.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. The Lounge Lizard sort of lounge.
There is that.
Lie
though.
There, right?
Yeah.
And that whole New York scene, it was kind of a bit like that.
Yeah.
John Zorn. But I don't know. But it was.
I think it's the attitude.
Maybe it is. This
yeah,
freedom.
The attitude of cool.
The freedom.
Yeah.
Jazz.
Well, like,
and the freedom
nobody's
to
freedom. Do this, or we can do this. Somebody said you can't do that. Well, watch this.
Then we're
going to
do
yeah.
it. Yeah. And that's definitely, there's
countryism. No, I'll show you too loud.
Yeah.
You're not playing enough notes. I'll show you not playing enough.
Extremes,
yeah.
And so perhaps that's a bit mm-hmm. it. But Mark was a consummate musician and a great producer for those first couple of records. It was great. I basically buy the Pro Tools system from him when he moves away, and we continue making records on that. little tiny rig for another 5 years, I guess, or maybe longer.
Oh, it was longer than that.
Yeah.
What about this new record? Did you guys record it yourselves?
We did it ourselves. We pretty much self. We had one other producer, Salim Nirala from Dallas. Right. Yeah. So we've done shows with Salim, and and he worked great, and and I ended up playing on a bunch of records with him, touring a bit with him, and we're still great friends, and he's a great ally for us in Dallas. So if anything, we kind of ended up growing, you know, friends in different places where you can go and perform. But yeah, that took the place of touring. Like, it really did. And I really am glad, in hindsight, that we have this entire backlog of music to share with people.
It also, I mean, it seems like when you were touring, you were opening for Walter, right?
Yeah. Or Ian. Oh, totally. Ian Moore. Yeah, we played with
or Ian Moore.
Yeah, you guys played with, you played with
But
Ian
it's great too. Because we open as Buttercup, and then we're Ian Moore's band.
Right. Oh, really?
We open as we played as the Silos, opening Buttercup, but Buttercup opened for the Silos, and we are also the Silos.
We had to bring two pairs of clothes to change.
Yeah. We'll do it. We'll do it again. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So those things kind of happened, and it's great that they can do it. Like, they can afford to bring us out. We can play our little set, and then we can, you know, like...
Wait, when was the Ian stuff on this last tour?
No, that was about a decade ago. That was
2012, I think.
Jason Garner that's even after I toured with him, playing with him.
Yeah, he had just done that record with Matt Harris, the El Sonido Nuevo. Yeah. So that's that record, which is a really psychedelic record for Ian.
Yeah.
And I think he heard us and thought, these guys could match that psychedelic sound. And we did.
Yeah.
It was really fun. It was really nice to get to know Ian, too. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Absolutely. That was one of my... That's my favorite tour I've ever been on. I never had more fun and just more...
Yeah, was Cullen on that one, too?
It was Cullen.
Oh, my God.
It was me, Cullen.
Oh, did you?
I love you, Cullen. Yeah.
Me, Cullen, Matt. It was George Reef for a little while, which was really awesome, too. Good. But that's where I met Matt, and then Matt and I ended up being roommates and then becoming great friends through that tour.
Matt.
Like, roommates on tour.
Matt was awesome.
Right. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's
and awesome. Kyle Schneider, who played with me and Einar back in the day, was the drummer.
Kyle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember Kyle.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a nice...
Well, it was Kyle who said, we played at the White Rabbit in San Antonio, and we opened for Ian, and then he gave us, like, a CD burn of that new CD.
Yeah.
And Kyle went, hey, man, did he give you that burn? We're like, yeah. He's like,
he didn't give him one.
He never does that. He didn't give me... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he didn't give me one. I'm like, oh, really? And then we knew. It's like, oh, there must be something about that. But he's turned out to be a great friend. Oh, man, he's awesome.
That's funny, because that record with, like, I took it over to the east side, like that stuff, like, that to me was like, that's like the ultimate Ian Moore record, like my favorite record.
Definitely. He loved.
It's a great record. Mm-hmm. It's a cool record, and we're a good backing band.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun on those dates. Like,
I don't know who we should be advertising this to, but
Nico
Case. Who needs us? Nico.
She should definitely.
You need a good sloppy band?
Yeah.
I like a sloppy
cheap.
Band.
We sleep in one bunk. Yeah.
We're cheap.
Who's playing drums today?
One of us.
We all are.
We all are.
All of us are going to, Joe's the one who can really play it, but Odie looks coolest.
True. And then Eric tries hardest.
Jamie doesn't play with you guys anymore?
He has left the band.
Okay.
And he left in 2010.
Okay.
And since then, we have not had a permanent drummer until Claire officially joined during the pandemic. But I think at this point we're kind of back to like.
And then she played drums on this record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, she played drums on the record.
Yeah, she nailed it.
Yeah, we're about to put out a new record that has no drums. It's actually just a minimalistic. We're gonna play a few songs off it tonight, which is just single acoustic guitar, electric bass, and voice.
Yeah.
And it's like an arena rock record. And it's so kind of like
we went to
punk rock.
Danny. Right. We went to Danny Reich, who still had that studio on Third Street when the east side of Austin hadn't blown up and gotten overly expensive. And so we made that record there in 4 days, something like that, like nothing. But it was really interesting to have that aesthetic of like, okay, we really only have the one guitar, we really only have the bass. Like, what can they do? And then we started minimizing those parts where I would just play one string and he would play one string. Yeah, we have five other strings. I'm like, just not, this.
It's you get obsessed with minimalism, and at a certain point, it's like, that kind of sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah. Right. It's two strings, yeah. Right? It's like a bar chord or something. I'm like, no, that's too much. Yeah. And it was fun. Danny did a great job of capturing it, and he was a lot of fun to work with. And
but we sat on this record for a while, yeah, because at the time we deemed it kind of harsh and maybe flat out depressing. And so, but now listening to it, it's aged really well. And we were doing these pieces when we just toured with Walter, and people were blown away. They really loved this performance piece that we do. We're normally a very talkative band, and we talk between songs, and there's a lot of storytelling and stuff.
Yeah.
With this piece, we say nothing. There's just silence. The only thing we speak is with the songs, and then we also have an easel where we write messages. And it's kind of interesting. And they reflect pieces of the song. They're funny, so they kind of lighten
the
depressing content coming out of the songs. But the songs are funny, too.
Yeah. My favorite part now is that we give out evaluation sheets after the show with pens and pencils, and we have people fill those out. And it's the best feedback we've ever received. It's the most honest.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times people don't like it. It's fine, whatever. But their comments are so prescient. I think it was a brilliant idea on Eric's part to go, we're going to pass these out. I'm like, this is great.
I mean, the college classes I've taught, you know, like we put these course evals at the end, and I was like, why don't we do that?
Yes.
Set eval. And it's and there's funny stuff like, you know, do you like too much hair, just right hair, less hair?
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you think about our fashion choices and stuff like that? You know, silly stuff. But then there's like some serious questions.
Yeah.
You know,
they sneak
about
in.
The
responses are so heartfelt and honest. I just can't believe it. Some of them are really honest and heartfelt and make me sort of cry when I think about them because they're so beautiful. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
we really touched somebody.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
And there's proof.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times you just pack up and leave and you're not sure.
Yeah, you guys were pretty good.
That felt good. You know, but there's really no proof. Not even in photos. But there they are, those evaluations. And we can go through them on the plane and be just like, oh my God, look at this. This is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really great idea. So that's my favorite part of the show right now is getting those back and sitting in the van and going, oh.
Well, the day before we left, couple days before the we left on tour, there's a band called Night Palace that was coming through town. It's a what's her name? She's from
Mrs. Palace,
Georgia, and she's super talented. She's kind of like a soccer mommy type pop singer. Mm. Better, yeah. She's really really great. Night Palace, and we did a opening set for her to run the set. And it was like on a Monday night, and so we were kind of helping her by like we dragged our closest friends, and we did the set evals before, and we got some really good feedback before we went on the tour, and we made changes in the songs based on like, you know, with the, you know, like
that's true.
Like a couple people were like, you need to get
those two songs don't go together,
right? Get to the really hit song faster, and then we did that, and it was better. It was a lot better. Cut some things.
It's cool. Hit song. There's so many.
It's really be like specific. you couldn't have done that when you were young.
No.
Get honest feedback from people. Would you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, probably. It would have
just been, who wrote this? That fucking guy in the yellow shirt. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Or it would have just been scrawled below me like in giant letters across the whole thing, but and like, then just made into a paper airplane and thrown at us. Right?
But I mean, in us in our youth, like I appreciate and welcome criticism now, but when. If Robbie Krieger had come up after the show and been like, you know, hey, you know, you guys might want to try this in your set, I'd be like, well, you're wearing stupid pants and a fanny pack, so you have no, you know, right. I wouldn't be able to accept that, or I didn't want it,
right?
Because I thought I was awesome,
right.
And then probably secretly we're afraid that you weren't awesome, but you were awesome,
right?
Now you know you're awesome,
yeah.
Enough. I mean, that's like at least how I feel. When you were saying that thing about your relationship changing to performing, I mean, it reminds me of what I'm trying to get at in the song about my voice, which is getting to this place where you're comfortable with and not chewing your arm off after a show because you were flat or feeble. I mean, I can't have John Lennon's voice no matter what I want. You know, there's
none of us can.
There's
no, but even at the top of that song, when you're screaming, the urgency and rawness that John Lennon conveyed in his singing, especially like in the early records, and then once he went through the weird screaming thing.
I like that.
Yeah. Everybody loves the weird screaming thing. He's a good screamer.
He's a great screamer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great whistler.
Yeah. A great whistler.
Oh, yeah.
So excellent.
Right?
This is true.
I knew you could do it.
Yeah.
None of us can whistle. We're all
terrible.
Thinking about Andrew Bird right now.
Oh, yeah. That guy whistles like a bird.
He does. Yeah, well, apt name.
That guy whistles
Debbie
like
and
a
I,
bird.
We met him a few weeks ago. Him and Sam Bream from...
Out in Marfa.
No. Alpine, no, at the Tobin Center.
Oh, we, he came through. That's right.
Yeah. It was a weird thing. We went and saw Iron Wine. He is so good, Sam Bream.
Yeah.
And Andrew Bird is like a freak
of
talent.
Yeah.
And they played together, and it was really interesting kind of shambly show that they put together where they were collaborating. And,
awesome.
And someone had paid a lot of money to have these backstage passes, and they got scared or something, and they just gave them to us.
No way!
And so they were these
fun.
These special things, and then Debbie's shy, and she's like, well, should we go back there? I'm like, we're going back.
Yeah.
No. And so like Sam Bream was back there, and I mean there's no one else there. We're just backstage milling about.
Wow.
I have the Andrew Bird record that I just bought. And but Sam was super nice. He was just like, hey, you want one of these tacos? I mean, he was just super great.
So he said,
had a great conversation with him.
These
nice
passes
guy.
Come
nice.
With a free glass of
looks
wine.
Much younger backstage.
Than on stage?
Yeah, on stage because his hair is so receding.
Yeah,
and long, and then the beard is so big, he kind of looks like Father Time.
Yeah,
but he's very spry.
I had an interesting experience. Me and Billy Harvey had an interesting experience with Bono in that way. We were both backstage at U2, and we were like where Odie is to Bono. But there was a guy that monopolized the whole backstage.
Oh man,
one guy, horrible guy. But it was great to watch Bono deal with a guy that was inviting him over to his house. It was really actually awesome to watch a superstar be like, you know, I don't think you want us at your house. We're going to tear shit up, you know, like, just kind of being funny. But anyway, we were standing that far from Bono, and he was a little squatty guy. Like we were both just like looking at him, and like Billy and I were like, this is so weird. Like he doesn't look like Bono at all. Like he has Bono's face, but like Bono has fat little fingers, and like he's a real short guy that like looks is kind of square bodied.
Yeah.
And then 15 minutes later, he came out on stage, and it was like, oh, that's Bono. Like, it was like two completely different guys.
That's
amazing.
Like, you were saying that guy looks younger backstage?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Bono looks far less Bono in real life than he does on stage.
That makes sense. There's some kind of transformation that the stage does. I mean, they say psychologically, like, if you're in front of a very beautiful person, a beautiful woman or something, that they can actually... Psychologists can measure your face tightens a little and the wrinkles reduce and
really?
Things happen and then you kind of get better posture and all these things happen.
Is that why I'm slouching?
Yeah, like we're all slouching.
I'm so good looking.
Yeah. but so that really that really speaks to inner beauty, right? It's true beauty is within.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you go out on stage, like. Or, I mean, when you meet them in person, there's this, like, beauty that comes out. That's the real person.
Ah.
And you can
that's
be
maybe
but ugly on the outside, but if you're beautiful on the inside, you
truly.
I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're beautiful on the outside. That's just how it goes.
Prince seems like somebody who's, like, a god of that.
Yeah.
You know, otherworldly, one of those true artists that is also a freaky genius type.
Yeah.
Type person and also just incredibly beautiful and sexual and all this stuff. And then I've seen interviews where he's struggling with the same stuff.
Yeah.
That he was human.
Yeah.
And self-deprecating and all this stuff. And really probably trying to get to that honest place where he could believe in himself and love himself.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's the weird thing about the arts is that, you know, being a creative person, like there is just that when you make something and no one's seen it yet, there is like literally like this could be it. This could be the thing that I put out and everyone's like, okay, you're done. This is the last we've been putting up for you. That's how I feel like every time I'm putting stuff out. And even like the older I get, I'm like, oh, this is it. They're going to be like, all right, dude, we've had enough of these songs. Heard your voice enough. Let's move on to a new guy.
I want to say it seems like it would be like that, but almost to the person, like to the people that we know, as we all get older, they get better. Charlie Rodman. Who was in Evergreen, has become an excellent singer-songwriter. His actual show where
that Peloponnesian Wars album was insane.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's gotten better.
I still
better.
Listen to it. It's,
now he's just writing songs.
I just
songs.
Listened to it 2 weeks ago. Going, I drove to Corpus Christi to go fishing.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but he recently wrote a song about his daughter learning how to drive. It's incredible. He had Robert Harrison produce it, right? He's a great producer.
Great producer.
So all of us are still striving and still, I think, getting better, improving, like getting closer to whom we are as human beings, and maybe that's what's making the art better.
What you're saying, Johnny, about like that you're going to put something out. At least for me, I think Stephen King says that if you feel repulsed by what you're writing,
yeah,
probably good.
Yeah.
Good. You know, or it's dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so like if you're worried that like, everyone's gonna be like, shame on you, Johnny Gowdy, degenerate. Yeah. You're canceled. then maybe you're doing something good. I don't know.
Could be. I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, the important thing is to just like keep pushing the boundaries and keep trying, keep collaborating. Like even Jamie Rodman is like the consummate just luthier now, just like
he's
world class.
My god, if you need any guitar work, Jamie Rodman,
I mean, he'll make his own tools,
fucking
antique guitars.
He's in Fred Ward Journal now, like he's done really well,
metal lathing, all kinds of crazy stuff that
he's
a
true artist.
Yeah. Wow,
yeah,
oh my god,
yeah.
Well, you guys are true artists.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks.
I'm really I'm glad that we got to do this.
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's do it again.
To see you again. It's really good to see you.
I want
to
do a show with you guys. You guys still back up people? Would you back up me?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but only if I dress like Robbie Krieger.
You can keep this.
Yeah. You got to dress like Robbie Krieger, and then it's a go for sure.
I mean, if we could all dress like Robbie Krieger,
No, we could just be the Robbie Kriegers.
You know who me and Einar met and had a photo with, and I don't know what happened to it at that thing in Dallas that time? Ivanka Trump.
No Ivana way.
Trump, the mom. The one that died.
Ivanka.
I don't know. I still have the picture of me and Eric. I mean, Kevin and Eric with Space Ghost.
Space Ghost. Yeah, we had a picture of Space Ghost.
I still have that Polaroid.
Sounds weird. We were playing a cable convention, so every channel from your television had a booth that you could walk into.
This is the first time I heard of Much Music. I didn't know about Much Music.
None of us
did.
Yeah,
Canadian, right?
Yeah, because it's Canadian.
Yeah, because yeah. So, they didn't have MTV.
Yeah, they had Much Music.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they were playing Canadian. Mike Morales' video. That was because he didn't get picked up by MTV on the first one. So we ended up, you know, playing a bunch of shows in Canada.
Do you guys, when is your next album coming out?
Soon.
Soon?
Yeah, it's soon.
Mark your calendar.
Mark your calendar. Future. we're negotiating like what would be the worst time of year to release it, and we're gonna probably hit that either December or January, I think.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, that's usually the time. Yeah. But the best time in for Austin people is like, I'm releasing it the week of South by Southwest, so right. that
oh
everyone
God.
Will get to hear it.
Okay,
that's gonna work.
Dropping the bucket there.
You're gonna be in town during South by.
People.
All right.
So people can find you guys at wearebuttercup.com. Are there any other shows coming up?
We don't really have anything right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Nothing.
No, I like it when people don't have to promote a thing.
Figure out what the next step is.
We do have some. We're in negotiations with a potentially grandiose show that will happen.
Okay.
That's probably going to be 24 hours straight of music. Of us
playing. That involves
and probably you will need to help us.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I would be there for that.
Okay.
To celebrate
24-hour constant music.
Yeah, and having people come in and out, other musicians play, but and having a flow. Of,
I would love to do
music.
That.
It could be the debut of the Robbie Kriegers.
that's the band.
The RKs.
Yeah, that's our band
the
name.
The RKs.
Yeah.
He's so talented, by the
way.
He can play.
I want to thank Richard for inviting me down. Everyone here at the Bugle Boy. It's in LaGrange, of all places. What a great room this is. Yeah.
You think everybody has played that riff to that song in this room, right?
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Or is it like taboo?
No, I know a lot of guests that have been on the show. I feel like this whole wall, with the exception of Woody Russell, has been on my show.
That's
Everyone
great.
Has. Yeah, wow. I'm pretty sure.
That's
excellent.
Amazing.
Yeah, Kevin.
Good
Carolyn,
work, buddy.
Gaucher, the whole
good
gang.
Work.
All right, well, thanks so much for
Absolutely,
for doing
man.
The show.
Thanks for having us, man. Right. It's good to see you, John.
Yes, Eric Sandin, Joe Reyes, and Odie Buttercup. Get out there and find them at wearebuttercup.com. What a great conversation, man. What a great conversation. I love those dudes. I love them. I hope that we stay in touch now. I'm going to tell them whenever I'm coming to San Antonio. They're going to let me know what's going on. I want to thank my friend Richard Scantz for setting that whole thing up. I want to thank Heather and everybody at The Bugle Boy. I urge all of you to get out there. Check out The Bugle Boy in LaGrange, thebugleboy.org. Okay, check out Buttercup, wearebuttercup.com. Find them. That's where you do your business with Buttercup. Great, great time. I want to thank everyone. What a great, great, great conversation. Share this with all your friends. You can follow us and see the pictures and a couple of short videos from this at How Did I Get Here, our Facebook page. Follow us there. Check it out. Like it. Leave a comment. Share it. You can find this podcast wherever it is you stream podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New podcasts every Tuesday and every Friday. And now we've been dropping From the Vaults late Saturday nights. All right. So get through, you scroll through our stuff. If you're new to the show, check it out. If you're a fan of the show, share this. If you're a fan of Buttercup, share this. Great, great, great talking to those guys. Check out the Bugle Boy and have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Why do I know this song? It's the voice of reflection of the soul. And if so, does my feeble throat mean my soul is weak? Is it a tunnel? Us unique, my voice, my little voice. I always loved John Lennon's voice the best. Once I could finally hear the difference from Paul or George, later on, other voices came to me. Ray Davies, Nico Case, I give my right leg to sing like that. On stage, I joked about getting a voice transplant. Ho, 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 ho. Very funny. So here we are now, faced with the choice. Love yourself or don't. But to love yourself, you gotta love your voice and make it sing. I love my voice, 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 I love my voice.
Repeated love.